9.3 FM. Big up to all the listeners who tune into I and I and Nadine every Thursday on this station. You can catch us on www.cket.ca. You see it.
And the sun's in a bad that I run, come for purge everything.
Get used to the UTR. Yeah.
Finish up school and enroll with the Lord, then you might just unlearn everything.
After hours, right here.
Miss them things.
Don't turn off your radio, continue.
Feel like them man shine better than the zinc house.
Because
well, let me give you some figure think about. Them see a man treating the symptoms. High to the cure is not for the poor. It's only for those you know can afford. Well, no, say lightning, thunder and brimstone. Fire and flames is faster than things stone. Our pebble bam bam, but not the son of things stones. If you sleep on drop fire, you reach non-stop. Make your bed rock like when rusted the injured. Burn everything.
Don't ever burn everything.
Give me the sun, so nobody try run. Come and for purge everything. Everything.
Don't ever burn everything.
Said that them lock in the place and them can't hold a key till them learn how to sing.
Listen, be careful now. So what do you mean, sir? Don't like to see young people strapped, because when I came in, I was just 23.
Them summer sound like a bird and me sing. Clean cause I drum at the shirt on me in. Records that spin at the web and the wind. Tell her for wait time I'm at the gym. Said I see my life from the king. Wash from the sins of the earth and I sing. Tell her that body's a temple. So watch where you bring in the church where you live.
Because I was living in a complex.
Complex place so the thugs them never read unless a magazine. By the piece of them carry weekends after Sunday. G sat down watch them prep the glock. They excited, yeah. Hardcore, yeah, them it ironic cause them none of the grease. Put the copper in the iron, yeah, them pale chemistry. If them increase the pressure, them I bring in the heat. Burn everything.
Do them up burn everything.
Give me the sun, so nobody try run. Come and for everything.
Do them up burn everything.
Said that them lock in the place and them can't hold a QCM. Bold bolts in a class one, but them on class man and put them in the lowest class. Man run from separation and move uptown and buy himself a lowest class. Them tell himself to stay in them lane and where the man go? Run go in the lowest class. Them the ones to the ghetto uptown, but it's alright when uptown in a ghetto. Give food and bring your clothes, be a dresser, but bring them be a dresser. Better check your address with a go and sip my tea, but it's still in the kettle.
Your room goes smart and the truth don't take up their mind. Take you out, but bodies are messy, get killed.
I'm blessed with the blessing, I'm guessing them get it. The clean of the water, the sweet of the lettuce. Measure up the ones that want rule, yo. Them Senegal school and end up on a fool, yo. They never pay them back when them use, yo. Bright light bulb, you need links like Google.
Don't let my mind everything.
Why? Because you're being your dancehall friend, them wanna make up nice in the area.
No, I used to live near.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. What? Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I brought to you live.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqut.ca or prison@cqut.ca, or you can call us at 514 448-4041, extension 6788. You are listening to CKUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial and www.ckut.ca online.
You're listening to The Prison Radio Show. My name's Noah.
And my name is Candace.
And we're your hosts for today's show. Today on the show, we'll be hearing an interview with Nicole from Ad Astra Comics about their new book about Peter Collins called Free Inside. For those unfamiliar with Pete, he was an organizer and lifer who passed away in 2015 from cancer after CSC denied him compassionate release. We'll also be hearing some work from Peter himself, as well as from people who were close to Peter. As we often do, though, we will start off the show with some news.
A major and three other prison guards were indicted in Brazoria County in Texas after they allegedly conspired to plant screwdrivers in an inmate's cell. The four prison officials are facing charges of felony, tampering with governmental records, and a misdemeanor official oppression after a prisoner's mother came forward with the allegations earlier this year. A grand jury voted last week to indict the four men, and a judge signed off on arrest warrants Tuesday. The indictments are just the latest fallout from an evidence-planting scheme that came amid an investigation into a short-lived disciplinary quota system requiring officers to write up inmates or risk facing consequences themselves. In the weeks after news of the scandals were first reported, five officials were fired, another resigned under investigation, several others, including a warden, were demoted or transferred. More than 600 disciplinary cases were tossed out, and the prison system in Texas is set out to review its disciplinary policies.
Redfawn Fallis, a 39-year-old member of the Oglala Sioux tribe who was accused of shooting at officers during protests in North Dakota against the Dakota Access oil pipeline, was sentenced yesterday to 4 years and 9 months in federal prison. Fallis was accused of firing a handgun three times while resisting arrest on October 27, 2016. No one was hurt. Fallis denied intentionally trying to injure anyone and claimed to not remember firing the gun after being tackled by police. She pleaded guilty on January 22nd to civil disorder and illegal possession of a gun by a convicted felon. Prosecutors in the pipeline case agreed to drop the count of discharge of a firearm during a felony crime of violence and to recommend a sentence of no more than 7 years in prison, though U.S. District Judge Daniel Hovland could have gone as high as 15 years. He could have gone up to 25 years had the third charge not been dropped. The defense asked for no more than 2.5 years. Hovland handed down his sentence at the conclusion of a 5.5-hour hearing in a courtroom filled with dozens of Fallis' supporters. Attorneys for both sides had no immediate comment on whether they would appeal. Fallis appeared at her sentencing wearing what she has described as, quote, culturally appropriate clothing that reflects her pride in her Native American heritage. Judge Hovland earlier granted her request to not have to wear jail clothing. Fallis' attorney said the decision not to take the case to trial was based on anti-protester sentiment in the area and unsuccessful attempts to have Hovland order the prosecution to turn over more information, including details about an FBI informant Fallis alleges seduced her and owned the gun. The government maintained in court documents that it turned over all information about the informant and that, quote, the defendant's reference to the FBI informant as some sort of complex issue is misplaced, unquote. Fallis' arrest was one of 761 that authorities made in southern North Dakota during the height of protests in 2016 and 2017. At times, thousands of pipeline opponents gathered in the region to protest the $3.8 billion project to move North Dakota oil to Illinois. But the effort didn't stop the project. The pipeline has been operating for a year. Opponents fear environmental harm, and four Native American tribes in the Dakotas are still fighting it in court. Texas-based developer Energy Transfer Partners says it's safe.
Former inmates of the shuttered Prison for Women in Kingston, Ontario, are pushing for a memorial garden at the site. where a developer is planning to construct a new mixed-use building. The former inmates say the garden is important to honor the checkered history of the prison and the women who took their own lives there while it operated from the mid-1930s to 2000. Seven women died over a two-year period from December 88 to February 91, and six of them were indigenous. A task force was appointed in 1989 to look into the prison's operations. It was then the only federal correctional facility for women. And in 1990, a report was released calling for sweeping changes and more facilities. In 1996, 1 year after a strip search video from P4W as the prison became known was made public, an inquiry by Madame Justice Louise Arbour again called for a substantive change. 4 years later, the last of P4W's prisoners were transferred to new facilities. Anne Hansen was one of the women incarcerated at the prison for participating in bombings in the 1980s while a member of the Squamish Five, also known as Direct Action, a group of activists who believe nonviolent resistance was ineffective. Hansen was sentenced to life and served 7 years at Kingston's P4W. She was released in the early 1990s and is kept in touch with other former inmates, including Fran Chiasson. Together, they helped found the P4W Memorial Collective in 2015, and alongside others, petitioned the prison site's former owner, Queen's University, to build a small memorial garden in front of the prison. Chiasson has served two stints at P4W, first for assaulting police and later for attempted murder. She is the driving force behind the garden and feels it's necessary to honor her fallen sisters. An open letter and petition by the collective calls for a memorial garden on a plot of land in front of the former administration building. A proposal is still being worked out, but could include a couple of benches, a small monument created by an indigenous person, and the names of the women who died at the prison. Anne Hansen says they're not opposed to the commercialization of the valuable parcel of land in downtown Kingston, saying it would be a monumental struggle to prevent that from happening, but the collective is hoping that the prison's heritage will be maintained and its history will not be completely erased. ABNA Investments Limited, based in Odessa, Ontario, recently stepped forward with a plan to buy the prison from Queen's University and redevelop it. Company owner Hank Dornekamp said the plans are also preliminary but include a new mixed residential and commercial building that will complement the architectural and historical character of the prison. Possible uses for the actual prison building, which has heritage protections both inside and out, include a possible student residence and hotel in the summer months. The Garden Collective has met with the company owner, who is spearheading the prison redevelopment project, and Hansen said he seemed open to the idea. The collective is planning a healing circle at the prison site on August 10th, which is also Prisoners' Justice Day.
Next up, we'll be hearing an interview with Nicole from Ad Astra Comics. Ad Astra is about to publish a new book called Free Inside, featuring the artwork and commentary of the late Peter Collins. Peter was a longtime contributor to the Prison Radio Show. In the interview, Nicole talks about Peter, how the book came about, and why Pete's case is important for prison abolitionists.
So my first question for you is, can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about Ad Astra?
Sure. My name is Nicole Marie Burton. I am currently based in a small town just outside of Ottawa. And Ad Astra Comics, which, by the way, means to the stars in Latin, is often a question I'm asked. Ad Astra Comics started in Toronto in 2013 as a website that worked to promote the idea of comics being used in social justice work, or comics that had social justice themes. So it started out as something of a comics criticism blog and then turned into a pop-up retail shop where we sold some of the comics that that I liked to talk so much about. And then in 2015, we started publishing books. So we started linking up with artists and writers and other people who were interested in using this medium to talk about a lot of things, talking about, if I just want to pull out some of the books that we've published, the topics range from gender discrimination to the impact of mining on people and the environment to gentrification and oral histories of radical movements. migrant detention. And our latest book was about advertisements, ads in the oil industry in Canada. So a pretty wide swath of sub-subjects under the larger heading of social justice. So we still continue to publish, and we'd like to host workshops, and we also do original comics work as well with mostly scholars at this point.
We're talking today about a new book that you all are putting out that's about Peter Collins. And most of the listeners of the Prison Radio Show remember Pete as a longtime contributor to the radio show from the inside. But it's been a few years since he's contributed to the show because he died in 2015. I'm wondering if you can talk a bit about Peter and who he was.
Sure. Peter was well known in a lot of prisoner rights groups as being one of the longest serving prisoners in Canada. In the early 80s, when Peter was a young man, he shot and killed a police officer in Ottawa. He received a life sentence, which in Canada is 25 years before the opportunity for parole. And as you mentioned, Pete passed away in 2015 at the age of 53. Pete was originally born in the UK, but had moved to Canada as a young boy. He was one of five children in a household and experienced a very, very difficult early childhood. He liked to call himself the black sheep, and often found himself looking for escape and ran away from home at a pretty young age. Pete was the victim of two different pedophiles when he was a young teen, and basically lived in a flop house, in like a drug house, as a teenager as well. So all of this is kind of the backdrop to the story of how Pete found himself in prison with a life sentence by the time he was 21 years old.
So you all started this project of producing this book of Peter's work before he died, and I was reading through some of the early press releases that you guys were putting out as part of the project, mm-hmm. and it sounded like it was part of the advocacy efforts that were trying to get Peter compassionate release from prison. So I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about that process and how the idea for the book came about at that time in Pete's life, and how Ad Astra decided to make this book about Pete's work.
Sure. Yeah, the conversation to produce this book actually started before we started publishing. It was in Toronto. We got a call from two very close friends of Pete's who were interested in working in cooperation with Pete's family and with other people who had known Pete to put out a body of his work. And I do recall the efforts to get Pete compassionate release, I never really thought of the project as being like specifically or like only with that goal. Obviously that was a goal of everybody that you know, who cared about Peter, was to be able to get him to leave the prison at the end of his life. Just for background here, I'm realizing I'm getting ahead of myself. Pete was diagnosed with bladder cancer when he was in prison, and he, you know, as is the case with bladder cancer, you notice blood in your urine. It took Pete about 6 months to be able to see a doctor who was then able to diagnose him. And although bladder cancer is actually easily treatable, you have to act fast when you see blood in the urine, and the prison system made that impossible for Pete. So the pleas for compassionate release had to do with him being able to be around his family and his loved ones at the end of his days, and he was denied that. That being said, work on the project continued. We were a bit stalled out for a bit because it just felt like, you know, an incredible amount of work. We're talking hundreds of drawings, thousands of words of essays, a real variety of work as well. We had initially been approached because Pete was a political cartoonist and had done comic art, but he was a prolific painter, an illustrator. He did design work. He actually ran a graphic design studio, attempted to run a graphic design studio out of prison for many years. And many people across Canada own paintings of Keith. So we were really trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to get this all together? How are we going to put this project together? It just feels like it could go on, and you know, we need to be able to put out other books and work on other projects while we're working on it. And then we ended up receiving a donation from a woman, Dee LeCompte, who basically made the project possible for us to put down the money for a print job and get it properly laid out. So we have her to thank for this book.
I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about how you decided what to put in the book in the end. Like, as you said, Peter had tons and tons of drawings that he had done over the years and tons of paintings and all kinds of art, and as well as like written pieces that he had done and different commentary that he had made over the years. How were the decisions made around content in the book?
Yeah, we took a long time going through all of the work. We also, you know, as the publisher, we also tried to make that process as consultative as possible with some of Pete's friends and family members. And so we tried a lot of things. I remember one early incarnation of the selection process involved uploading all of Pete's work, like hundreds and hundreds of files, to a Google Drive where people would then sort of almost like vote on the things that they wanted to see in the book. And that ended up not working. That was too time consuming for everybody in the project. And so mostly we talked about, you know, what are people's favorite pieces? What are pieces of art that have stories behind them that we could use to talk about Peter's experience or the experience of prisoners in Canadian prisons? Of course, there was also an aesthetic element to it. And, you know, we're thinking about what artwork is, you know, really beautiful and striking and deserves a wider audience. And at the end of the day, we were mostly able to put almost everything that we wanted in. And people that look through the book, you'll be able to see right away that as you're flipping through it, it's gorgeous. It's like really vivid, full color from end to end. And a lot of the pages have multiple pieces of art in them. And we've been able to incorporate a design that made room for a maximum number of artistic pieces. But some of the ones that we decided to keep are the ones that can help inform the public about what life in prisons is like in Canada. That's an important part of this project, is to be able to raise people's awareness about the conditions for prisoners in this country.
There's also written pieces in the book, and I was reading online that friends of Peter's and people who knew him were able to contribute written pieces. Can you talk a bit about who contributed written pieces and what those pieces are about?
Pete knew a surprising number of people through correspondence in prison. Some of the work is by people who had been doing advocacy work for prisoners. Some people are fellow inmates. Some people, there's a piece by a man who was a Pete's chaplain for a bit. So it is a pretty wide variety. Everybody has different stories about Pete, but most people really try to show that this was a deeply compassionate man who was very intellectually curious and very, I guess you could say, insistent or stubborn about helping people around him. One of the things that Pete said towards the end of his life was that he felt like he discovered almost the way that he could be useful when he was in prison, because there was so much that needed to be done. So you can really see that in all the ways that Pete knew all of these different people, whether it was through HIV AIDS awareness in prison, or tutoring other prisoners, or advocating for animal rights from within prison. People have lots of different stories, and it's been interesting to kind of put all of this text down in one place and see that variety in one place.
So this book has been in the works for almost 3 years, it seems. And I'm wondering, how close is it to being finished? Where are you guys at in the timeline of putting this book out into the world?
Well, we are waiting right now to get a notice from our printer that says that the book is within 48 hours of being delivered. So the files are just at the printer, and we're waiting to receive them. in book form. At that point, we will be sending out, oh gosh, I guess about 150 copies that were pre-ordered in the last couple of weeks. We set up a little pre-order campaign online where people could get their copies. Ideally, it was to make sure that everybody who wanted them for Prisoner's Justice Day would have them in hand, and we're definitely going to make that goal. So we'll actually have a few more weeks here in July to see if anybody else wants to get some copies, and if they want to get them to their neighborhood or their community space or their classroom, that's a possibility.
For folks who are still looking for the books, like, how could they get in touch with you guys and pre-order a copy of the book?
Sure. I mean, the easiest thing to do really is to Google Free Inside, the name of the book, The Life and Work of Peter Collins. People can also check out our website at adastracomics.com, and that will take you to our online store where people can order it there. And people can also just send us an email and we can arrange payment an old-fashioned way. Our email address is just adastracomics@gmail.com, and we just arrange orders that way.
One last question. I'm wondering if you want to talk a little bit about what's in store in the future for Ad Astra, and specifically what your hopes are for this book in the future.
Yeah, we linked up with a lot of people who are doing work currently in prisons around this book. One is a literacy project based out of Toronto that organizes integrated classes with post-secondary students and prisoners. These types of activities or awareness projects around getting the rest of the population to think about prisons and to think about the impact of prisons on prisoners, we think are really positive, and we are really excited to get the book out there and into the hands of people who are interested in these issues. So working with students of criminology has been one area of interest for us. People who are doing work around prisons and mental health right now, or systemic racism in the prison system. Pete wrote and drew about these issues a lot over the years. And so having something that we can pass over to students or teachers or advocates or activists to be able to say, here, this can be something that is supplementary to the work that you're already doing. That's ideally what we're hoping that this book can help achieve. After this project, so this is like one of the bigger books that we've put out. It's 184 pages, full color, and we laid it out from beginning to end. So it's really been, like you mentioned, you know, 3 years of work on it. It's been a whopper of a project compared to some of the other stuff that we've done. We got started as a publisher just doing reprints of books that had gone out of print. So we've been kind of doing a bit of a baby step process into more and more complicated work. But actually, after Free Inside is done, we're going to be taking her easy a little bit. We've got two shorter comics. One is sort of a primer about feminism, intersectional feminism. The other one is about school segregation in the United States and the charter school movement. So definitely smaller, more manageable projects that will be coming out by the end of the year. Projects that are kind of on the cheaper end of the price scale in terms of what we have to offer. We like to be able to offer books that are like a wide range of price points so that people can take something away when we're at book fairs and stuff. So these two will be shorter books. They'll look more like your garden variety Marvel comic book. And we're hoping they can be available to students and to younger activists who are interested in more introductory stuff about those two subjects.
That's it for my questions. Did you have anything you wanted to add or anything that I missed?
Cool. Yeah. Well, maybe it's not anything new for any of your listeners, but the soundbite that I like to talk about with Free Inside is maybe something that's worth saying here, which is just that I feel like the important thing about Peter Collins' case is that you look at Peter's life and you look at his actions and you think, this is exactly the type of person that you would expect to see in prison. And prison still wasn't the place for him. And that's why I think that his case is oftentimes more compelling than other high-profile prison cases that we know of, like prison stories where there was, you know, a problem with the way that the court proceedings happened or institutional racism. These are like open and closed, shut, open and shut reasons for why people shouldn't be in jail. But I think that Pete's case is an opportunity for us to talk about things that are a little more fundamental. And I think that Pete's case is an argument for prison abolition. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it's so important, is that it really fundamentally challenges what we think is happening in the prison system and what social good it performs.
I like this soundbite.
Thanks.
If you feel like it, tell me a little bit more, like how does, you know, working on this book and thinking through the things that you've learned about Peter's life, how has that opened up like ways of thinking about prison abolition for you?
Oh yeah, that's fair. I feel like I've been really like strongly impacted by working on this book over the last 3 years. Like I was already, I think I could already say that I was a prison abolitionist when I started working on it. I've been an anarchist for years, and I did do prisoner support work like years ago. But I think being up close with the words and with the images has really hammered it home to me that this is an area of our society that really needs to fundamentally change. We spend over $100,000 per prisoner of Canadian tax dollars to keep people in jail, to use a form of punishment / rehabilitation that has proven not to work. So whether the goal is to actually turn citizens into better citizens, or whether it's to rehabilitate the prisoner, all of the conventional, all of the evidence, all of the empirical data that we've been able to gather about prisons, it argues that prison is not actually something that can make society better. It's mostly just about carceral punishment. And when you think about that being an incredible amount of money that could be going towards something productive, it really gets under your skin, and it can really bother you. And that's even before we talk about instances of institutional racism or the fact that Black and Indigenous people are incarcerated at a much higher rates than other prisoners. That's before we talk about the impact of isolation and solitary confinement on prisoners. And it's before we talk about privatization of prisons, which is not as big of a concern here as it is in the United States, but there are some people who are advocating for it. I was hearing recently about a so-called prison expert who suggested that the way that we could solve that heavy price tag for Canadian prisoners is to privatize prisons in Canada. It's like, no, oh my God, that's like going in the opposite direction that we need to be going into. Pete talks about how there is no rehabilitation work that's being done in prisons. And it's interesting. I feel like a critic could say, oh, well, Pete himself criticized the prison system, but based on his own track record, it obviously did him some good. You know, he like got his life together and dealt with his childhood trauma and got education and got different academic degrees while he was in prison. But what's interesting about that is that the prison system wasn't the thing that helped Pete rehabilitate. It was actually a pen pal relationship that he had with a social worker for about 6 years while he was in jail. And that social worker, he said, didn't judge him, but did, you know, push back against some ideas that he thought were certainties. And it was that person listening without judgment and working through those ideas with him that really put him on the path of rehabilitation, of like self-rehabilitation. And the prison system, in fact, was an active impediment to that process. So if we can look at positive solutions, I mean, that was a thing that I really started thinking about, was like, wow, this is a really big system. And how do we come up with positive solutions? Obviously, there are sections of the public that are just never going to buy into the idea that all jails should disappear like that. Most people who have actually, spent more time than I have on the ground with this data have suggested that preventative measures are a great place to start. You know, putting more money into social work or in early case interventions where people can receive certain supports that they need before they get put into prison. And what's interesting is that that budget, that number that I was talking about, which I think it's about $115,000 per prisoner in taxpayer dollars, that actually comes out of the public safety budget, which is also the disaster preparedness budget. And I can think of a lot of places in Canada where actually we aren't prepared for major disasters. And it's like that money could be put towards climate change and fighting climate change. So, I mean, looking at the ways that this is part of a holistic problem in society, the complexity of that problem should not make us turn away from the problem. We still need to deal with that problem. And there are lots of interesting solutions being proposed right now around prisons and around jails and around more effective methods of rehabilitating people who socially transgress. A lot of stuff around restorative justice and Indigenous forms of justice are being talked about right now. It's a really, really exciting time to be talking about alternatives to prisons. So I'm hoping that this book can be one little part of that.
Maybe it makes sense for us to wrap things up with you doing one last pitch for the book and let people know what the title is and where they can find it and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, great. So the book is called Free Inside, The Life and Work of Peter Collins, and it's 185 pages of full-color artwork along with essays and testimonials about the life of this man who served 32 years in Canadian prisons. If people want to order a copy of the book, flat out, the best way to order a copy of the book is just to Google Free Inside Peter Collins. And our online store will pop up. It's easier than me spelling it out. Likewise, if people want to jump on social media, we do share samples of the artwork on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, and people can communicate with us there if they want to arrange to pay for a copy in a way that is not online. I work with Ad Astra Comics. We publish and promote comics with social justice themes, and people can find us and just talk with us about the work that we're doing on any of those platforms.
Amazing. I think this book is such an awesome project. It's such a great memorial to Peter. For those listening who remember, Peter was a longtime contributor to our radio show. He used to call in and give us news and analysis about what was going on in the prison system. I would also like to say, for anyone who's listening from the inside, if you want to get a copy of the book, you can definitely write to the Prison Radio Show, and we'll figure out how to make that happen. We always say our address at the end of this show, so just listen up until the end of the show, and people can get our mailing address and then send us a letter, and we'll figure out how to make that happen. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Nicole. This has been really great.
Thank you. Just one more thing that I completely forgot to mention that you reminded me of is that the royalties from this project, I completely forgot to mention that Pete's family, who are getting royalties from the sale of the book, are donating those royalties to Calls from Home, the radio prison show that that Pete also helped in the past. We're really happy to be able to say that a small portion of this book is at least going towards a really important service for prisoners in Ontario.
That was Nicole from Ad Astra Comics talking about their new book, Free Inside, The Life and Work of Peter Collins. The time is presently 5:38 p.m., and you are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
I live on the shore of Lake Ontario. The world talks to me through an FM radio. And the gun tower and the guards and the headcounts in the yard say it's gonna be a long time before they let me go. Didn't want
That was a song about Peter Collins called The Lifer, which was written by his brother, Christian Collins. Next, here on the Prison Radio Show, we will hear news and commentaries by Mumia Abu-Jamal and Carrie Shakabuna Marshall on the police murder of Antoine Rose Jr. in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're going to hear also about the release of Move 9 member Debbie Africa and a call to all athletes and celebrities to adopt a federal prisoner for a U.S. presidential pardon.
Runs for his life. A common car stop may lead to an uncommon outcome. Antoine Rose Jr. was in a car stopped in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania recently by local police. And Rose, a 17-year-old, followed his instinct and ran away. A cop at the scene, Michael Rosfeld, pulls his service weapon and shoots 1, 2, 3 shots. And Rose is gone. 3 shots, 3 hits, 1 death. Rose, unarmed, had no weapon and posed no threat. Rosfeld, on his first day on the job as a cop, may have worked his last, as the local prosecutor charged him with murder. And now, a 17-year-old boy has breathed his last, and by death joined scores of youth killed by cops, Oscar Grant, Rakia Boyd, Mike Brown, Tamir Rice, Alan Bluford, and beyond. East Pittsburgh has exploded into protest over what happened to Rose. Once again, death comes by cops. But because of video phones and social media, we see it, and resistance grows. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. For Debbie Africa, freedom. Debbie Africa is one of a group called the Move 9, survivors of the August 8, 1978 police attack on Move in Philadelphia. From that day to less than a week ago, Debbie has been in a cell serving out an outrageous 30 to 100 year prison sentence, one of 7 surviving Move members. And like other Move members, she served 10 years over her minimum term before release on parole. Upon her release, in comments published by The Guardian of London, she remarked on 2 Move sisters who were not granted parole, Janine and Janet Africa. Debbie said, "Having to leave them was hard. I was torn up inside because, of course, I want to come home. But I want them to come with me. I was in shock when it didn't happen that way." When Debbie was first arrested, she was 8 months pregnant, and in September 1978, she gave birth to a healthy baby boy, Michael Africa Jr. Fed by her sisters, who smuggled food from the mess hall, she spent 3 days with her son before it was discovered she gave birth, when the two were immediately separated. Mike Jr. tells of the first night living with his mother. He knocked on her bedroom door And when she told him to come in, she was standing there barefoot. He looked down at her feet and realized it was the first time in his life that he had seen his mother's feet. His friend Benny told him that two-year-old babies and infants knew more about their mothers than he, a man almost 40 years old. But the story is Debbie Africa, after 40 years behind bars, is free. May freedom come swiftly for the rest of the MOVE survivors of August 8, 1978. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. NFL players adopt a federal prisoner for President Trump's pardon, by Carrie Shakabuna Marshall. It was very noble of celebrity Kim Kardashian to visit the White House to meet with President Trump and plead for a presidential pardon for the life of a black grandmother held in federal prison for a life term. What was equally noble is that President Trump instantly signed the grandmother's pardon, and she was released from federal prison the next day. What was more astonishing than that was recently President Trump made a public announcement to NFL players who took a knee for social justice in America for black people during the national anthem at NFL games, declaring that he would give a presidential pardon and release any federal prisoner presented to him by an NFL player who may be innocent, unduly convicted, or have an unjust sentence were they to petition him. Man, the cojones of President Trump. What a bold move. A challenge to the NFL players, even. Should NFL players accept President Trump's challenge? Of course they should. So what should NFL players that were protesting do? How about raising the stakes, you know, anteing up? Hey, you NFL players, here's a suggestion. How about each NFL player that took a knee in protest now adopt a federal prisoner to petition President Trump for the pardon of their sentences and immediate release from federal prison? Beginning with political prisoners like Mutulu Shakur, Leonard Peltier, and even your very own juvenile lifer prisoner, Kerry Shagabuna Marshall from Philadelphia, PA. So hashtag NFL players adopt a federal prisoner for President Trump's pardon. It may not end mass incarceration or stop General Jeff Beauregard Sessions from turning back the clock on social justice, but it surely would save some lives that otherwise would die in prison. Besides, it's a win-win situation for NFL players and President Trump. What do you got to lose? From the belly of the beast at Prison Radio, I am Shaka Boone. Thank you for listening.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Malcolm Jenkins should help political prisoners get presidential pardons. By Kerry Shagabuna Marshall. Malcolm Jenkins, Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl champion and superb social activist for black people in America. Great article in the New York Times in response to President Trump's clemency offer to individuals. It was measured in tone, mature, thought-provoking, and 100% factually and actually correct in every aspect. However, as great a response article to Trump as it was, there are black, Native American, Latino, and Caucasian political prisoners of the struggle who have been languishing in prison since the 1960s and 1970s for nearly half a century, like Dr. Mutulu Shakur of the Black Panther Party and Leonard Peltier of the American Indian Movement, whose lives can be saved at this moment with a presidential pardon, whom otherwise will die in federal prison without it. There is a common understanding among freedom fighters around the world. Never leave your political prisoners to die in the enemy's prisons if we can help them. For they are our heroes and sheroes of the struggle, and we have a duty to help free them from the death by incarceration sentences given to them by this American government. Although presidential pardons for a few or mass of individuals is not a panacea for systemic, institutionalized white supremacy and racial oppression, nonetheless, such presidential pardons can set at liberty some captive women and men that were victims of COINTELPRO, the war on drugs, and mass incarceration against black and brown peoples. Therefore, let us seize the moment by calling on all athletes and celebrities to seek presidential pardons for our political prisoners, our innocent, our unduly convicted, those serving disproportionate sentences, and for our truly deserving people. We are counting on you all. From the belly of the beast at Prison Radio, I am Shaka Boone. Thank you for listening.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Malcolm Jenkins, Chef.
They picked me up and put me in a county jail. They picked me up and put me in a county jail. They wouldn't even let my woman come and go my bail. Now I'm in prison, but I've almost did my time. Now I'm in prison, but I've almost did my time. They give me 6 months, but I had to wake up now. Course I know my baby, she's gonna jump and shout. I know my baby, she's gonna jump and shout. When that train roll up and I come walking out. Now play them, Mr. Tambor. Take these stripes from round me, chain wave around my leg. These stripes from round me, and these chains from round my leg. Well, these stripes don't hurt me, but these chains, yeah, they give me death.
That was a song by Big Maceo Merriweather. It was County Jail Blues, recorded in Chicago in 1941. Before the commentaries by Shakabuna, we heard a song about killer cops by a local band called Offensive Mindset. We heard Black Moving Target. The time is currently 5:56, and you've been listening to The Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at ckut.ca.
You can check out past episodes of The Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show episode will air on Friday, July 27th at 11 a.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. You can feel free to write us at The Prison Radio Show or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3A2B3. Thanks again for tuning into The Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name's Noah.
My name is Candace.
And we've been your hosts for today. Please stay tuned.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.